Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about evolution and intelligent design. I'm your host, Ira Berkowitz, speaking to you from Jerusalem, Israel. Today, Rabbi Moshe Averick and I will be discussing the logical fallacy called the God of the Gaps and how it applies or doesn't apply to the theory of intelligent design. Rabbi Averick is the author of the provocative book, Nonsense of a High Order, The Confused World of Modern Atheism. It's the kind of book no one can be neutral about, and it's available on Amazon. Rabbi Averick, thanks for coming to talk with us.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Rabbi Averick, you recently wrote an article for the Times of Israel about the problem of the origin of life, the thesis that a creator is the best explanation for the origin of life, and the common rebuttal that such an argument is based on a fallacy, commonly called the God of the Gaps, or the argument from ignorance. Let's handle these issues one at a time. What problems come up when we try to come up with a natural, materialistic explanation for the origin of life?
Well, first of all, I just want to point out that the name of the article that you might be referring to was called God of the Gaps, Is There No End to the Foolishness? Which we'll be talking about as we go on. The problems that come up, you mean besides the fact that the origin of life field is a complete failure? Is that what you mean? Besides the fact that nobody has the slightest clue how such a thing could happen? I don't know what else to say except that. That's the simple fact. As James Tour, who was probably one of the world's greatest living chemists from Rice University, he said that, he says, when are scientists going to finally admit that the origin of life emperor is completely naked? And, you know, that's the way it is. That's the problem that comes up. Nobody has a clue how such a thing could happen.
But there are two things that, therefore, you're mentioning. You're saying, one, we don't have a clue, and two, we really know we don't have a clue.
Oh, yeah. People are very, very aware of the fact they don't have a clue. Stuart Kaufman, many of them are quite candid about it. Stuart Kaufman said, anyone who says that they understand how life began, you know, like 3.5 billion years ago, is either a fool or a knave. So that, I think that about sums it up.
Okay, so why, in your opinion, is a creator the best explanation for this conundrum?
Well, I think that that's kind of obvious. It's the intuitive answer. When you have super complex machinery, which is contained in the bacterial cell, which is the quote unquote the simplest living cell, you're talking about nanotechnology that is it's the most sophisticated nanotechnology in the known universe. It contains the most sophisticated digital information processing system in the known universe, the DNA genetic system. Machinery like that simply are intuitive. I'm just talking about the intuitive common sense reaction is that things like that just don't happen by themselves. So, a creator is the obvious answer. Sir Fred Hoyle put it, he said, the reason why intelligent design isn't talked about more is it's a psychological issue rather than a scientific issue.
We're avoiding it. So I want to get to what detractors say by first understanding what is the argument from ignorance. When is it legitimate to refute an argument by claiming that it's an argument from ignorance?
Well, it's valid when the person actually is, putting forth an argument from ignorance.
Okay, but what
I'll give you a simple example. Murder investigation. Guy comes in, the detective comes in, he has no clues, no suspects, God forbid a young girl is murdered, and he says, well, I guess we have no suspects, we don't know who did it, it must be the boyfriend. Well, that's an argument from ignorance. In other words, you don't have any positive evidence that it's the boyfriend, you just have no other suspects and no evidence, so you say, well, because we don't know, it must be him. That's an argument from ignorance. It's based on non-evidence as opposed to evidence. And that's a valid objection. Everybody immediately understands that you can't suspect or can't convict a guy. Maybe you could suspect them, that's fine. But you couldn't convict a guy just because there are no other suspects.
So why can't we say that the argument for a creator, based on the problems posed by the origin of life, is an argument from ignorance? Evolutionary biologist Jerry Coyne sums up arguments like yours and Steve Myers in this way. He's saying that you're saying the Because we don't understand how life originated on Earth, God must have done it. You say that Jerry Coyne's rebuttal is feeble. Why?
Oh, I'd say it's less than feeble for the simple fact that that isn't the argument. In other words, nobody says that just because a materialistic scientist has not found an answer to how life could begin by itself, that that proves that it must be a creator or it must be God, whoever or you know whatever the identity of the creator is. That's not the argument. Just because doesn't prove anything. In other words, that would be saying just because medical science technology, medical science has not come up with a cure for cancer, that means there can't be a cure for cancer. That's nonsense. Just because they don't know doesn't prove anything. But that's not the argument. Nobody says that it's just because no one has discovered an answer. The question is, why haven't they discovered an answer?
Why haven't they?
Well, let's put it this way. The example I used in the article is the following. Imagine a mechanical engineer, two mechanical engineers. So one of them says, I'm prepared to invest millions of dollars in my laboratory to attempt to build a perpetual motion machine. So the second engineer says, wait a second, you're wasting your time and money. No one has ever succeeded in building such a machine. So the first engineer says, wait a second, are you telling me that just because no one has ever succeeded, that proves it can't be done? So the engineer, with a little bit of exasperation, says, of course that's not what I'm saying. Just because no one has succeeded doesn't prove anything. It's the reason why no one has ever succeeded. And the reason why no one has ever succeeded is because building a perpetual motion machine would violate the most fundamental laws of physics and reality that seem to govern our universe. That's why no one has succeeded. It's not the fact that they haven't succeeded. And it's the same thing with origin of life. It's not just the fact that origin of life researchers have completely failed until now to find a naturalistic answer to bridge this huge gap between non-life and life. It's the reason that they failed. And the reason that they failed is really the same reason why nobody can build a perpetual motion machine. Professor Adi Pras, who is a professor of chemistry at Ben-Gurion University. He's also a visiting professor at a university in the United States. I don't remember exactly where he's a visiting professor. But he wrote a book about how chemistry becomes biology. And he used a metaphor, the problem of origin of life, he used a metaphor of finding a refrigerator in the middle of a field. He said, well, you discover this refrigerator. It's got a solar panel to make energy. How did it get there in the middle of this field? He said, if I would tell you that it happened through naturalistic processes spontaneously, you'd think that I'd gone mad. He says, natural forces don't put refrigerators together. Natural unguided forces do the opposite. A natural unguided forces break down and destroy machinery. For instance, if you don't service your car, it falls apart, it seizes up, it stops working. Natural forces don't make your car run better. Okay, it does just the opposite. And that's, of course, that sums up the whole issue in a nutshell. A naturalistic origin of life, to go from non-living chemicals to the most sophisticated machinery in the known universe, and that's not an exaggeration at all. This is more sophisticated than anything that human beings can possibly put together, at least at this point. Maybe some point in the future they will, but that's beside the point. To say that it would violate, not only would it violate common sense, not only does it violate everything we observe about nature, it really violates the laws of physics and mathematical probability. That's the reason why they failed, and that's what the argument is. It's not just because they haven't found an answer. And the reason why people like Jerry Coyne and others like him keep repeating this mantra, God of the gaps, God of the gaps, just because we haven't discovered an answer doesn't mean that we won't find an answer. It's because instead of actually dealing with the argument head on and facing the reality of the problem, like many, by the way, many other scientists have, you have a man, for instance, by the name of Werner Arber, who won a Nobel Prize in biology. So I would think that he represents an authentic scientific voice. He said, look, I'm a biologist. I'm adding, and he won a Nobel Prize. He's the real deal. And he said, I have no clue how something as complex as a living cell could have happened by itself. And he says, frankly, I find the idea of God, the creator, a very acceptable solution. I don't know if he's a believer or not, but he said, it's at the very least, it's a very reasonable possibility. It's one real solution. I mean, and if you're not ready to face that, it means you don't want to deal with reality at all.
Okay, one last question. What about the claim that positing a creator in the first place is a science killer? Allow me to quote Eugenie Scott, who used to be with the National Center for Science Education. Science's concern for testing, she says, science's concern for testing and control rules out supernatural causation. Supporters of the God did it argument hold that God is omnipotent. If there are omnipotent forces in the universe, by definition, it is impossible to hold their influences constant. One cannot control such powers. Lacking the possibility of control of supernatural forces, scientists forego them in explanation. Only natural explanations are used. No one yet has invented a theometer, so we will just have to muddle along with material explanations. Your response?
Eugenie Scott. My response, basically all she's saying is, you know, we've taken a... We've accepted as an article of faith that that God isn't there and that there's no creator and that there's no forces outside of nature. So what does that mean? She hasn't shown that it's really true. She's just simply said that that's the way we're choosing to do things. And the fact is, of course, is that she's dead wrong. There are any number of things that we see in the natural world. One of them being origin of life. The simplest and easiest to see is origin of life that actually does point to a creator that is outside of the world of nature. So to say that we don't have a theometer is simply not true. We do have a theometer. And that's why Werner Arber said that, hey, I find the idea of a God to be an acceptable solution. And by the way, another Nobel Prize winning biologist, Christian De Duve, said the exact same thing. He said, as long as we don't know how life began, you cannot objectively rule out instant divine creation. So Eugenie Scott lives in a very small, narrow-minded little world. And of course, she's a committed ideological atheist. And therefore, she's going to do everything she can to simply block out the obvious. And the obvious is that any intelligent person looking at the living world is going to talk about the possibility, at least, of a creator. I'm not making the case not right now for God. I'm just talking about the idea of considering at least the possibility. And, Richard Dawkins, the papal figure, the king of modern atheism, said that before Darwin's theory, there's no possible way that he could have been an atheist. Which means that even someone like him, I won't even say even someone like him, because he's a man who really, at the very least, has a deep appreciation for the wonders of the physical world, of the biological world. He himself acknowledges that when you're looking at the natural world, your immediate reaction is creator, God, something so big, something so incredible. So Eugenie Scott has got to kind of expand her mind a little and, what's the word? Break out of the box a little bit, Eugenie.
Okay. Well, thank you, Rabbi Averick, for speaking with us. Rabbi Averick's book, Nonsense of a High Order, The Confused World of Modern Atheism, is available on Amazon. It will make you laugh and it will make you think. This has been Ira Berkowitz for Intelligent Design, The Future.
In recent years, great leaps in DNA sequencing technologies have empowered scientists to study DNA as never before. But will Darwin's theory of evolution stand the test of this new data, this increasing evidence for design and purpose? You can find out when you read Michael Behe's revolutionary new book, Darwin Devolves, now available in bookstores and online at darwindevolves.com.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.